Welcome to the all-new VM Podcast. This is where we discuss the latest and most fascinating, powerful, and disruptive additive manufacturing and 3D printing technologies with the people that invent, develop, use, and market them. Join us on this journey as we take you from voxels to matter through the most advanced applications across aerospace, automotive, healthcare, consumer products, and the most advanced areas of digital production. I am your host, Davide Scher, CEO and co-founder of Voxel Matters, the most trusted media, marketing, and market research firm for the ever-growing world of additive manufacturing. Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of the Voxel Matters podcast. Today, we welcome Brad Krieger, the new CEO at Velo3D, the largest US-based manufacturer of metal powder bed fusion 3D printers. Mr. Krieger joined Velo3D in December 2022 as the Executive Vice President of Operations, and he was tasked with transforming the company's processes, consolidating them after a period of rapid, perhaps even too rapid, expansion. When Benny Buehler, the company's founder, stepped down as CEO late last year, he remains on the board of directors, Mr. Krieger stepped up. Today, he's here to speak with Voxel Matters about his strategy to turn the company around, reassure investors, and attack the next phase of massive AM growth, starting with key defense applications. He intends to do this by leveraging the industrialization experience he matured working at large companies such as Thermo Fisher, where his responsibilities included taking startups and young organizations that had been acquired and bringing them through the industrialization curve.
They're a great organization. I definitely learned quite a bit from them. There was a lot of acquisitions and a lot of integration work. And so a lot of my time and effort was on that side. So we would acquire an organization. I would go in, take over that organ, and really integrate it. And so it left me with a lot of basically taking startups and taking young organizations and bringing them through the industrialization curve. And that's what I did at Affymetrics for sure, is what I like to call going from make to manufacture, right? So it's how do you take a technology that's new, that's sort of bench scale, lab scale in the early stages, and how do you truly industrialize it? You know, the analogy I always use is chocolate chip cookies. We could all go off and make chocolate chip cookies and we bring them back and we'd agree that they're chocolate chip cookies, but they'd look different, they'd be different sizes. You buy a bag of Chips Ahoy anywhere on earth and you're gonna get the same thing. So how do you really get things to that level of control and reproducibility? Coming fellow, that's where Benny brought me in, was to transform operations. And the company had gone through a stage of really dramatic growth in 2022. And the result of that is you grow faster than your ability to put processes, systems, and infrastructure in place. And ultimately, the consequences of that, I think, started to materialize in 2023 in the form of product quality, reliability issues, all the things that come from being inefficient due to rapid growth. Coming into this from a operations standpoint, the first area that I focused in on was the supply chain and getting that stabilized, putting processes, and then the actual manufacturing procedures. And more recently, in the second half of the year, it was a lot of focus on quality system. Velo as a company really didn't have a quality organization or a quality department. So building that out was been important from stabilizing operations. More recently, stepping into the CEO role, my focus and objective has shifted a little bit. Now looking at the overall organization, it's very clear that in 2023, we faced a lot of challenges. It was a very challenging year for the company. I think it was a very challenging year for the industry. I don't think we were alone. I do think we get a lot of attention because we're one of the domestic manufacturers newer on the scene. There's a lot of eyes on us. So that kind of amplifies the scrutiny. But if I really go back to what were the challenges that we faced, there's really two major prongs. One is product reliability and quality issues that we experienced in the latter part of 2023, and then commercial execution. What I think we saw was as we came around the corner from selling to early adopters to the early majority, the reality is I don't think we had the commercial discipline and skill set to shift in terms of how you sell, because it goes from being a technology sell to a value sell. And so what did we do in terms of the product quality piece? you know, certainly bringing in, creating a quality organization, and then in the fourth quarter, expanding that quality organization by 40% has done a lot to improve product quality. And we're seeing that pay off in terms of significant reductions in installation times. We made quite a bit of investments in the customer service side, and we're seeing that field issue resolutions are occurring at about half the time that they did before. So we've reduced those downtime intervals by about a little less than 50%.
So when you say product quality, a Velo 3D printer is such a complex machine that is like, where do you start to, if you have issues with quality, like where do you start?
It's not so much quality in terms of the resulting parts printed. It's reliability of the system. And you actually, I think, have a really great handle on it. It is a very complex machine. And so when you think about that reliability, it comes in a number of different pieces. It comes down to training. In some cases, it comes down to reliability issues because it's a very sophisticated machine and the customer isn't fully trained or doesn't know how to operate or interact with it effectively. In some cases, it's learning curve in terms of our own preventative maintenance protocols. The XC platform was launched in 2022. So when we got into 2023, it had only been around for less than a year. And so we were finding that there were preventative maintenance things that needed to be done that we hadn't initially identified. And so we were learning about them and then developing preventative maintenance protocols around them. So, and then some of it was design. Again, it was a new design and you're working through things. You find out that, hey, there's shorter life cycles for certain mechanical components than you had anticipated. Sure. So you got to do some minor design modifications. So it was really a confluence of a lot of factors that led to that reliability piece. And it was impacting bookings. What we were seeing is customers who had bought systems and were ready to buy another system were having issues with their existing systems and saying, I'm not going to buy the new one until the old one is working. I think we've seen that situation change very rapidly. And kind of evidence of that is of the bookings we got in the last 6 weeks, more than 50% of those were repeat customers. So we're starting to see customers who have systems are getting to the point that they address their needs. They're seeing their systems as reliable and they're ready to place orders for the next system. On the commercial front, we're starting to see a lot of traction there. We brought in a new EVP of sales, Michelle. What she brought was real rigor and discipline around value selling processes, training, and it's paid off. And the biggest way we see that is the quality of the opportunities we're cultivating. What we saw in 2023, I think, is we were in many cases chasing the wrong customers. We would get customers right up to the point that they'd be about ready to place a PO, and then we'd find out they can't achieve the funding or whatever. That's entirely reverse of the six opportunities that Michelle's team went at for in December. I think they landed five of those opportunities. So I think we're doing a much better job of finding the right customers, making sure there's the right value proposition, that they've got the funding lined up and so on and so forth. So we've brought in over $12 million of bookings in the last 6 weeks, and we see a lot of opportunities in front of us. I think of those two major challenges, the commercial, the product reliability, I think we've turned the corner. We're starting to see green shoots. It's not to say we're done. There's still more work to be done on both of those fronts. But no, it's a lot of very favorable early indicators coming up.
Are you still going after the same verticals? And how did the types of customers change?
Space, energy, places where we've been successful. I think we still see continued growth there. And we have space companies that are buying additional systems right now, already have orders, and we have communicated to us a vision of multiple more systems to be placed. So I think the space and the energy and the sectors we've been in traditionally continue to be valuable and areas for growth. We're definitely expanding into defense. That's a newer area for us, but one that seems to be we're very uniquely suited to service. If you look at the first half of 2023, more than a third of our new customers and our revenue came from defense. You know, it's a very different value proposition than space. We are the only domestic supplier, which is something that's really important because there's a lot of focus on an entirely domestic supply. We recently achieved STIG certification, which is a really critical cybersecurity standard that is, you've got to have that to play in this space at all. And our technology lends itself really well to their objective, which is particularly the print file portability aspect. What they're really wanting to print is spare parts for an aging infrastructure. So they want to be able to create a design file and have it print on different printers in different locations on demand. And our technology is really well suited to do that for them. Beyond that, avionics, automotive, you know, those are other sectors that we're starting to explore and starting to see some traction in.
Okay.
I think the dynamics there are different. The defense sector is ready to go and it's moving very quickly. Avionics, you know, just the way that industry works, it's a longer time horizon. But the scale and the magnitude they talk about is mind-numbing. We were talking to second or third largest provider of engines to Boeing and Airbus, and they were talking about their long-term plan is as they adopt it to AM, you know, they're talking about hundreds of printers. So it's different dynamics, different time horizon, but you know, I think when you look out multiple years, it lends well into this vision of continuing to grow our business, grow the industry, and see further adoption.
Before you mentioned about supply chain, but is your supply chain domestic,
yeah,
only domestic?
Great question. So we have, over the past year or so, moved to a lot of contract manufacturers in low-cost regions to optimize for cost. What I would say, though, is that being a startup that was founded here in the Bay Area, the initial contract manufacturers and suppliers are all relatively Bay Area-centric. And so we haven't severed those relationships. So we do have the original contract manufacturing and supply base that is effectively entirely domestic, accessible to us. We, again, for cost reasons and stuff, we've moved away from that. You know, if there was a need from a defense standpoint to nationalize that supply chain, it's accessible to us, maybe be a higher cost profile, but generally in the defense area, they're not very cost sensitive. So I think we're positioned to cover that need if it became relevant.
How is the stock market situation affecting your strategy?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think you make decisions and drive the company exclusively off of that or have that as a primary focus. But I do think it is important. One of our objectives is obviously to return shareholder value. I don't think we're happy with the stock price. I don't think anybody is. I think we, you know, my view is we're radically undervalued. I think a lot of that comes from, there was a lot of signals that we put out at the end of last year that I think were confusing to investors. As a publicly traded company, there's only, you know, there's certain things we can and can't communicate. And when you go through a quarter or so of realignment and you decide to pivot and change your strategy, it can be very confusing and very anxiety conveying to the market. I think what we're endeavoring to do right now is the most important thing for the stock market, which is send very clear signals. I mean, I think people are speculating kind of wildly. And I think what we can do and the best thing to do is go out there and be very clear about, look, there is a demand. We have the right product. There is a market here. There is demand for this. We're positioned to execute on it. I think we needed as a company for our long-term survival and success to stop for a minute and reorient ourselves because the way we were going at it, I don't think it was efficient and cost-effective. I think though, what one of the things we did in Q4 is we've really positioned ourselves well going forward to become cost-neutral and profitable. And yeah, if we can become cost-neutral and profitable by the end of the year, that will absolutely translate to market value, stock market appreciation.
Back to what you were saying about defense being a growing business, and I guess that's partly related to the geopolitical tensions. Everybody wants to really get everything in line, at least, just in case. And is that overall favorable to your business or not? Is it better to have defense a segment that invests in additive, but then other segments may not invest as much?
Yeah, it's a good question. Obviously, to some extent, one of the things you've got to be careful about is as you go to a broader range of markets, at some point, does it become dilutive? And how do you focus your R&D efforts and so on and so forth? One of the things that is helpful to us when you think about a capital equipment business is diversification of the customer base. When you look at space, they tend to work in big timing cycles where they'll make a lot of investments and then they'll kind of quiet down, they'll do a bunch of development and then they kind of go through the next cycle. So you can have for a particular customer a period of a year and a half where they're not buying because they're going through a development cycle. So having this sort of portfolio of customers that's distributed that have different buying cycles and things like that, it adds a lot of linearity, which is pretty important because otherwise, large capital equipment like this, the revenue and the demand can be very lumpy. And we're tolerant to that to a certain extent, but it, obviously it's a lot more operationally efficient and effective if we can have somewhat stable volumes. And so diversification of that customer base helps a lot.
More in general, how do you see the additive industry, but the metal additive industry developing over the next, say, couple of years to 5 years from now? You mentioned some companies, they have plans of several hundred machines eventually, but what's going to happen in the next few years, in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you think about the next couple of years, I think we're at a really interesting point in the industry. I think there's a certain level of disappointment, I think, in the industry over the last couple of years as people realize certain things and certain solutions that they thought additive manufacturing would solve, that it didn't really fulfill the promise. But as much as that sounds negative, the real upside of that is I think it's been informative, and I think people are now have a much better view of where additive manufacturing makes sense and where it adds a lot of value. So I actually think, as you look forward to the next 2 years, I think you're going to see an increase in adoption rate of additive manufacturing because people now really understand it. And they're not going to make the same mistakes in terms of assuming this would work and then finding out it's a failure or so on and so forth. I think that the challenges of the last 2 years have led to a much more intelligent user base. And you know, the other thing I think you're going to see is I think you're going to see a bit of a bifurcation. I think you're going to see certain larger organizations that are very mature and capable really accelerate their use of AM and become very independent. And then I see less progress, I think, on kind of the smaller side of things, because I think those smaller manufacturers, smaller players will continue to struggle a little bit with this adoption curve. Because I think going from CNC machines, just the skill sets, the infrastructure you need, is different. And you've got to hit a certain critical mass to be able to make that investment and really turn that to successful. So I think there'll be a bifurcation and there'll be a bit of a gap between. There'll be this very high adoption, very high success. And then there'll still be this area that, you know, don't get me wrong, it'll still be very present, and but it'll grow at a lower pace. And that'll be smaller scale applications.